The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service and the Associated Press. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on the 30th of March, written by Nicole Winfield. Responding to Indigenous, Vatican rejects discovery doctrine. Vatican City. The Vatican on March 30 responded to Indigenous demands and formally repudiated the doctrine of discovery. The theories backed by 15th century papal bulls that legitimized the colonial era seizure of native lands and formed the basis of some property laws today. A Vatican statement said the papal bulls, or decrees, did not adequately reflect the equal dignity and rights of indigenous peoples, and have never been considered expressions of the Catholic faith. The statement from the Vatican's development and education offices marked a historic recognition of the Vatican's own complicity in colonial-era abuses committed by European powers, and was issued as history's first Latin American pontiff, who has made remarkable apologies to native peoples, was hospitalized with a respiratory infection. Indigenous leaders welcomed the statement, even though it continued to take some distance from acknowledging actual Vatican culpability. The statement said the papal documents had been manipulated for political purposes by colonial powers to justify immoral acts against indigenous people that were carried out, at times, without opposition from ecclesial authorities. It said it was right to recognize these errors, acknowledge the terrible effects of colonial-era assimilation policies on indigenous people, and ask for their forgiveness. The statement was a response to decades of indigenous demands for the Vatican to formally rescind the papal bulls that provided the Portuguese and Spanish kingdoms the religious backing to expand their territories in Africa and the Americas for the sake of spreading Christianity. Those decrees underpin the doctrine of discovery, a legal concept coined in an 1823 U.S. Supreme Court decision that has come to be understood as meaning that ownership and sovereignty over land passed Europeans because they discovered it. It was cited as recently as a 2005 Supreme Court decision involving the Oneida Indian Nation, written by the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. During Pope Francis' 2022 visit to Canada, where he apologized to indigenous peoples for the residential school system that forcibly removed native children from their homes, he was met with demands for a formal repudiation of the papal bulls. Two indigenous women unfurled a banner at the altar of the National Shrine of St. Anne du Beaupré on July 29 that read, "Rescind the Doctrine," in bright red and black letters. The protesters were escorted away, and the mass proceeded without incident, though the women later marched the banner out of the basilica and draped it on the railing. In the statement, the Vatican said, "In no uncertain terms, the Church's magisterium upholds the respect due to every human being. The Catholic Church, therefore, repudiates those concepts that fail to recognize the inherent human rights of indigenous peoples, including what has become known as the legal and political doctrine of discovery." Phil Fontaine, a former national chief of the Assembly of First Nations in Canada, who was part of the delegation that met with Francis at the Vatican before the trip and then accompanied him throughout, said the statement was wonderful, resolved an outstanding issue, and now puts the matter to civil authorities to revise property laws that cite the doctrine. The Holy Father promised that upon his return to Rome, they would begin work on a statement, which was designed to allay the fears and concerns of many survivors and others concerned about the relationship between their Catholic Church and our people. And he did as he said he would do, Fontaine told the Associated Press. The church has done one thing, as it said it would do, for the Holy Father. Now the ball is in the court of governments, the United States and in Canada, but particularly in the United States, where the doctrine is embedded in the law, he said. The Vatican offered no evidence that the three papal bulls, Dum Diversus in 1452, Romanus Pontifex in 1455, and Inter Caetera in 1493, had themselves been formally abrogated, rescinded, or rejected, as Vatican officials have often said. But it cited a subsequent bull, Sublimis Dux, in 1537, that reaffirmed that indigenous peoples shouldn't be deprived of their liberty or the possession of their property and were not to be enslaved. Cardinal Michael Czerny, the Canadian Jesuit whose office co-authored the statement, stressed that the original bulls had long ago been abrogated and that the use of the term doctrine, which in this case is a legal term, not a religious one, had led to centuries of confusion about the church's role. The original bulls, he said, are being treated as if they were teaching, magisterial, or doctrinal documents, and they are an ad hoc political move. And I think to solemnly repudiate an ad hoc political move is to generate more confusion than clarity. He stressed that the statement wasn't just about setting the historical record straight, but to discover, identify, analyze, and try to overcome what we can only call the enduring effects of colonialism today. It was significant that the repudiation of the doctrine of discovery came during the pontificate of history's first Latin American pope. Even before the Canadian trip, the Argentine pope had apologized to native peoples in Bolivia in 2015 for the crimes of the colonial era conquest of the Americas. Cardinal José Tolentino de Mendonca, prefect of the Vatican's culture office, said the statement was a reflection of the Vatican's dialogue with indigenous people. This note is part of what we might call the architecture of reconciliation, and also the product of the art of reconciliation, the process whereby people commit to listening to each other, to speaking to each other, and to growth in mutual understanding, he said in a statement. Our next piece comes from the Religion News Service, on March the 23rd, written by Bob Smetana and entitled Report. LGBTQ Americans tend to be younger and have no religion. For the most part, religious Americans say their LGBTQ neighbors should be free of discrimination when they are at work, in public, or at home. This is true even among groups that oppose same-sex marriage. One place they disagree is over whether businesses such as cake bakers or other vendors ever have the right to refuse service. On that issue, Americans are split along religious and party lines. Meanwhile, almost half of LGBTQ Americans are young and claim no religion. Those are among the findings of a new report on polarization and LGBTQ rights from the Washington, D.C.-based Public Religion Research Institute, or PRRI. The report, based on data from PRRI's 2022 American Values Atlas, looked at views of 22,984 adults living in all 50 states. PRRI's researchers found that about 10% of Americans overall, almost half, 46%, of them under the age of 30, identify as LGBTQ. 3% is gay or lesbian, 4% is bisexual, and 2% is something else. Nearly one quarter of Americans under 30 identify as LGBTQ, 23%. According to the report, LGBTQ Americans are more likely to have no religious affiliation, 50%, than Americans in general, 6%. They also are much more likely to be Democrats, 48%, than Republicans, 8%. Among non-Christian Americans, about 1 in 5 identify as LGBTQ, according to the report. This includes 19% of Unitarian Universalist, 19% of the religiously unaffiliated, 15% of Buddhist, 11% of Jews, 9% of Muslims, 5% of Hindus, and 32% of members of other non-Christian religions, according to the report. Members of Christian religious traditions are less likely to identify as LGBTQ, with the exception of Hispanic Protestants, 12%. Researchers from PRRI found that most religious groups, from 92% of Unitarian Universalists to 62% of white evangelical Protestants, support anti-discrimination laws. This includes Jews, 86%, Hispanic Catholics, 86%, Black Protestants, 79%, Latter-day Saints, 78%, Hindus, 76%, and Hispanic Protestants, 62%. Jehovah's Witnesses, 50%, are the religious group least likely to support such laws. When it comes to views of small businesses that want to refuse to provide products or services to lesbian or gay people, faith groups were more divided. Unitarian Universalist, 88%, Hispanic Catholics, 78%, Hindus, 77%, and people of other non-Christian faiths, 77%, were most likely to oppose the idea of refusing service. White Evangelical Protestants, 37%, Latter-day Saints, 46%, Jehovah's Witnesses, 50%, and Orthodox Christians, 51%, were less likely. The PRRI's report found a wide variation in views along political lines. 90% of Democrats said they favor non-discrimination laws that protect LGBTQ people in jobs, public accommodations, and housing. Fewer Republicans, 66%, favor such laws. Democrats are twice as likely to oppose rules that allow small businesses to refuse service to gays or lesbians, 86% compared with 41% of Republicans. Nationally, the PRRI continues to find that most Americans broadly support LGBTQ rights in 2022, said Melissa Deckman, CEO of PRRI. At the same time, partisan polarization is growing on some measures, including on religiously based refusals of service to LGBTQ Americans by business owners. Deckman noted that these differences are striking amid the current politicization of issues involving LGBTQ rights, and with a major ruling expected from the U.S. Supreme Court this term in regard to religious refusals by business owners. In 2018, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Colorado baker Jack Phillips, who refused to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. The court said the Colorado Civil Rights Commission mishandled the case. Phillips lost a state court appeal earlier this year on a different case concerning his refusal to make a cake for a transgender customer. The court is currently considering the case of Lori Smith, a graphic designer who wants to expand her business to make websites for weddings, but said she would not make websites for same-sex weddings. Smith's attorneys have argued that making a website is an exercise of free speech. Researchers at PRRI also found continued disagreement among religious groups over same-sex marriage. Jews, 81%, Buddhists, 77%, white mainline Protestants, 77%, and both white and Hispanic Catholics, 75%, are among the most likely to support same-sex marriage. Jehovah's Witnesses, 19%, white evangelical Protestants, 38%, Hispanic Protestants, 43%, and Latter-day Saints are less likely. Despite the opposition to same-sex marriage among Latter-day Saints, leaders in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints played a key role in supporting the Respect for Marriage Act, which was signed by President Joe Biden in late 2022. The law provided federal recognition of both same-sex marriage and interracial marriage, both of which had been previously made legal by court decisions. Now, an article from the Religion News Service that was published on March 29, written by Eleonora Franchica and entitled, Once Behind Bars, a Pastor Advocates for Giving Released Prisoners a Clean Slate. Albany, New York. I didn't grow up wanting to be a pastor, says Pastor Aaron Chancy, 40, who leads Mount Carmel Seventh-day Adventist Church in Syracuse, New York. Let the record show that Chancy's life history backs him up. He fathered 8 children from 5 different women. He spent time in and out of jail on minor charges and a total of 2 years in prison on felonies. During that period, he had a red-eyed demon's face tattooed on his right cheek. The tattoo symbolized my internal face, he told RNS. On the exterior of my face, I was always smiling, but that's not how I felt inside. Inside, I was angry. I was mad. I was hateful. In 2008, Chancy had the tattoo removed with a laser. It didn't represent him anymore, he said, and was attracting too much negative attention. He graduated in 2016 with a bachelor's degree in theology from Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama, and in 2018 earned a master's degree in divinity at Andrews University in Michigan. He is now a PhD student and a faith leader for his community. He is also fighting for legislation that would give formerly incarcerated people like him a new chance in life. Born in Berrien Springs, Michigan, Chancy moved frequently as a child due to his parents' service in the military. Of the several states where the family was stationed, Texas is the one he calls home. Texas was also where he first went to a juvenile correctional facility at age 16. While moving, I was losing pieces of myself throughout life, and I never got those back. I was lost, and because I was lost, the streets found me. During those years, Chancy never wanted anything different. That was all I wanted to do in life, he said. I knew with the streets comes either incarceration or death. So when I got locked up the first time, I thought that was just part of life. The only change prison brought about was in the types of crimes he committed. From robbery, he shifted to selling drugs. While incarcerated, he learned how to hide narcotics and move them from state to state. After leaving prison in Texas, Chancy transferred his parole to North Carolina and started transporting marijuana between the two states via UPS. In 2005, Chancy was arrested for the final time after an assault charge. However, his change from criminal to man of faith did not occur until April 2008. In those 3 years, Chancy continued to be involved in illegal activities without ever getting caught by law enforcement. But at 25, Chancy, fed up with his lifestyle outside of prison, tried to commit suicide by overdosing on drugs. He survived, but he'd never be the same. I had a night where it was like God was revealing to me, you need to make a change in your life, Chancy recalled. From the vantage point of his present life, however, another night feels equally transformative. In 2000, nearly a decade before enrolling for his theology degree, he had a gun pointed at his head and was robbed. He recounts that he wanted to kill his assailant. He sought advice from a childhood friend, Brandon Bernard, who was on death row on 2 murder charges. Bernard told Chancy to let it go to not end up like him. Chancy did let it go and for the last 4 years of Bernard's life, before he was executed by lethal injection in 2020, Chancy was his minister. "That could have been me," Chancy said. Once he decided to change his direction, Chancy began studying different religions and rediscovered Jesus and the Bible, committing himself to read a chapter a day. "The process helped him understand who he was," he said. He embraced the Seventh-day Adventist Church, his family's denomination. "I was making a conscious decision, and I fell in love with Jesus," Chancy said. As he began to show up at church on a daily basis, people who knew him from his youth were excited that he was back. Slowly, he earned their trust, and he began suggesting new initiatives to connect the church to the community. The church became his new refuge. He stopped smoking, drinking, and hanging out with bad influences. In 2012, after reading a book about being a pastor, Chancy realized that that was his path. "Everything in the book was just exactly the questions I was asking, the things I was looking for," he said. "This is what God was calling me to do." After serving as associate pastor in Queens and the Bronx, Chancy was assigned to lead his Syracuse church in April 2022. Along the way, Chancy repeatedly had to overcome his past. "Sometimes people see my record before they see me," he said. Another hurdle, Chancy said, was his relationship with women and sex, which had been formed by pornography and street life. "I had to relearn and reprogram what it really means to actually treat a woman with respect," he said. Today, Chancy describes himself as very vocal. "Often church people act like they're holier than you, like they never messed up," he said. "I try to pull that out of them so we can all identify with one another." "This gives people hope," he affirms. Kayla Skipper, a 29-year-old Mount Carmel Seventh-day Adventist Church member and screenwriter, confirms that Chancy made her feel comfortable sharing her path after she had distanced herself from the church. "There is an appreciation for people like Pastor Chancy who have a story to tell, who have walked away from God, who've been incarcerated, who've had issues with drugs or whatever," she says. "You feel like you're not so alone in the struggles of life." "The realistic approach to people's lives serves his plans as a pastor," Skipper said. "He really wants to bring the church into the community." Chancy works with organizations aimed at helping youth and incarcerated people, inspiring change through his testimony. I want to continue to open up the church so that it goes beyond the four walls," he said. "If the people aren't making a difference in the community, what's the purpose of this building?" As soon as he moved to Syracuse, Chancy reached out to Jail Ministry, an organization that gives individuals incarcerated in Onondaga County access to spiritual, emotional, and personal support. Among the activities with Jail Ministry, Chancy visits incarcerated people to listen to them and share his life as an example of change. He is one of only a few formerly incarcerated people who joined this activity in the almost 50 years of the organization. "His life is just so rich with knowledge, experience, compassion, and faith that he brings a tremendous amount to the jail and our jail ministry community," said Keith Chiplicki, the executive director of Jail Ministry. "I see him and his love for people as a tremendous foundation for the future." Chancy is also an advocate for the Clean Slate Act, which would seal former incarcerated people's conviction records in New York State. Criminal records would be sealed 3 years after the sentence is completed for misdemeanors and 7 years after for felonies. The measure, in some cases with slightly different criteria, is already a law in 10 states, including New Jersey, Connecticut, and California. Chancy spoke at several rallies in Syracuse and in New York's capital, Albany, to support the campaign. According to Chancy, the bill would give formerly incarcerated people another chance at life and a fresh start. The ministry saved me, he said, but the byproduct of it is I get to save others through my story. Chancey blames himself for his past and regrets making a conscious decision to use valuable time doing harmful things, including hurting people in his criminal activities. The victims of my foolishness, he calls them. He rues not being a full-time father to any of his 8 children. Life is hard, he said, but if people put themselves in the right positions and around the right people, they can get to wherever they want and be whatever they want. A lot of times you're looking in the wrong places and at the wrong things, he said. Hope is there. Put yourself in a position to obtain it. And now a brief excerpt from an article in the Religion News Service on March 31st entitled, From Senate Subcommittee to Easter Sermon, Raphael Warnock on Life as a Pastor Politician. Raphael Warnock, U.S. Senator and Baptist pastor, was wrapping up his time on Capitol Hill before heading back to his native Georgia in time for what is perhaps the busiest week of the year for Christian clergy. From testifying to members of Congress about farming to preaching Holy Week sermons from the pulpit of Atlanta's famed Ebenezer Baptist Church, such is the back and forth life of the pastor politician who won re-election to the Senate in 2022. The heir of that pulpit from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated nearly 55 years ago on April 4, Warnock spoke to Religion News Service of how that day will always be a solemn one for him. I was born a year after his death, and yet his commitment to service recruited me to Morehouse College, said Warnock, little knowing at the time that he'd come to serve the same Atlanta church that King did. I wanted to be at the school that inspired him. I would not be serving in the Senate and doing what I'm doing were it not for the sacrifice of Dr. King and those who worked alongside him. And the best way I can express my gratitude for that is to continue the work of building what he called the beloved community. And for me, that means ensuring people have access to affordable health care and affordable housing, that their children can be educated without finding themselves so beleaguered with debt, and to promote peace and justice both here and abroad. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.